Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We did manage to watch some football this weekend, though that really isn't the highlight here. That really isn't the headline. Is it Ryan Nanny joining us on this college football podcast, which has to take a slight divert into, I don't know, human resources, management, that kind of thing?
Failure. I mean, it's not that different from talking about Florida after all. Yeah, we recorded this podcast last night. I'm responsible for recording both ends of it and editing it. And I hear you all laughing and mocking me right now. The idea that somebody edits this podcast is ridiculous. That somebody puts time and effort into it. Laughable. But I do, because I try, because I'm stupid. Not today, because do you know what happened? My computer, I think because we said we were doing an all Florida or all things connected to Florida fullcast, just said nope. So I have one audio file on my computer that's just me talking to nothing. Is it a metaphor? You're goddamn right it is. So we're not doing that. We're throwing
that
the poll out.
Far for the course, to be quite
so now,
honest.
So now I'm just recording off my laptop mic in a just like a phone room here at the Vox Media New York offices. It's going to sound like shit. I'm not going to edit it at all. We're just going to publish it almost entirely as is. And anybody who takes issue with it can fucking fight me.
Hell yeah. Talk that shit.
Let him have it, man.
So I like that this is at least the second time this has happened, where we've had one full caster just talking it like in a Garfield minus Garfield situation, audially. And I also like that your computer just took one look at all that Florida and just punted. Punt, 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 punt.
Do not want. Do not want. So, yeah, we can talk about Florida. We can talk about the other games. I honestly don't care. As long as we record something that involves all three of us and not just fucking me, I consider this a win. That's how low my standards have fallen.
We're in record label releasing best of album just to check off a contractually obligated album portion of the season.
This only has two new tracks on it. Yeah, you're fucking right. It does.
Clip yeah, they're both recorded in 1988. Do something about it.
Only live tracks. That's what you get. You get the recycled live tracks.
But there
bonus
is
one, extended version with
there
like
is,
a 5 seconds delay.
There is one upside to this this cock up on my part. We talked about a bunch of games. I'm not going to pretend that I remember what we said about them. I do remember that we had a good riff on Ohio State's quarterbacks from 2014 being the Trinity, but we're not going to rehash that. We did not, however, talk about one of the most amazing things of the college football weekend, and that came from the Kentucky-Tennessee game. And it was not something done by either of the coaches or players, at least not directly. Spencer, what was the greatest moment of this particular game?
I think the greatest moment came early in the Tennessee-Kentucky game, because it is the only time I have ever seen this. Got a little chippy early, and the referees, like the bus drivers of so many public schools that I went to, decided that the easiest way to stop it was to just convict everybody. And how did they do that, Jason Kirk?
Well, they tried to defy the wisdom of Bubba Sparks. They tried to arrest them all. They just flagged everybody on the fucking field.
Well, even on the field is not expansive enough.
They didn't specify. They said the personal foul on everybody.
Right.
On the sideline? In the luxury boxes? In the stand? The whole damn states?
In the
maybe.
World?
I mean, Ryan, you're the lawyer here. Who what was the extent of the flagging here?
So I think, you know, the statutory construction we should use here is that a referee's authority, we can agree, only extends to players and coaches. Referees can't really flag fans or media members. They could, in theory, throw them out of the game, but you couldn't throw a penalty flag on them. So let's assume that it only includes them. However, there is no limitation beyond that. So my theory is that from any player who was actively involved in a game at that moment in time in college football was assessed a 15-yard penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct. And yes, that means that we should go back and reverse engineer and say, you know what? Maybe Nebraska didn't score that touchdown to beat Purdue. Maybe it shouldn't have counted.
Maybe we should fire Mike Riley. I'm sure Baker Mayfield picked up an unsportsmanlike somewhere in that second quarter. He's probably booted now.
If he didn't, if he hadn't, he deserved it. We all know
I'm a little disappointed if he hadn't. So if a crowd throws a bunch of shit in the end zone and delays a game or whatever, like that team can be hit with a penalty for that. So I mean, sure. I think the ref's power extends to the crowd in a certain extent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of fuzzy, I guess. If you pay me enough money, I will dig into the legal archives and see what I can. I'll write you up a brief on it, but it's not going to be cheap, just so you know.
I will bankroll this effort.
And it was even better because, you know, college football has this. Was it this year or last year that they instituted the two personal foul rule?
It was last year for coaches. I'm not sure exactly when it went in for players.
Right. So basically the rule is you get two personal fouls of any kind in the course of a game and you're out. So Tennessee and Kentucky, very early in the game, everybody was just like, guess what? Everybody's coming to the plate 0-2. I dare you to swing. I dare you to swing. And it got at least two players kicked out of this game, as I recall.
Yeah. Mind you, it got an important player. It got Rashawn Golden. They said quite a 2 weeks because Rashawn Golden got kicked out. And what happened at the end of the game? Yeah, that's right. The Tennessee secondary helped surrender a key score in this game to put Kentucky up for good and to beat Tennessee in Lexington. That mattered. You should also know that Rashawn Golden, you might remember that name. You should. He's the guy who told the crowd that they were number one. Give him 11s. Shot the double bird. In Alabama, during Alabama's blowout of Tennessee. So when Tennessee finally scored, he gave them the double bird. This is my way of saying that Rashawn Golden is obviously the best player on Tennessee, period.
He's definitely the most player on Tennessee.
Rashawn Golden is definitely the most player on Tennessee. And for that, I salute him. You got to have a title and you got to be Excelsior in at least one degree. It might as well be in being yourself.
And how do you salute? How do you most appropriately salute him?
Oh, I'm giving him the full stone cold. You can't see me right now, but I'm doing this as hard as I can.
The true stone cold, where you're flipping the bird, but you've turned it around. So it's not like, it's like, I'm not flipping you off. I'm flipping up off all these haters behind
me. That's right.
You know what I'm doing? I'm flipping off both teams, everybody on both benches.
Everybody.
That's what I'm doing.
Fuck all at everyone. Once.
Yellow cards for all of Appalachia at once.
I was overjoyed when this happened because it was literally the first time I had ever seen the all y'all employed, right? The like group, the like CC everybody. Group text the entire game. Y'all all get it, including everyone in the stands.
The reply all.
Yeah, no, this, you replied all to the stadium and you rode with it, right? Like, who did it go to? Oh, I don't know. Just hit address book. Everybody gets it.
First of all, fuck each and every last one of you as a staff, as a record label, as a motherfucking stadium.
I respect it. I know that this will probably be, this is the only time I actually want to be in on the officials call for the week, is just so that I could hear, y'all.
I hope it's the other way. It's like, you are the bravest men we've ever seen. You dared to go where not even eagles fly.
Bro, that was sick.
it's the ultimate Street Fighter. It's the ultimate Street Fighter combo. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 55, 56, 57, 58, K.O.
I'm so impressed by this. That was obviously the best thing that happened this week. Period. In football, I mean, involving anything, right? Including the firing of Jim McElwain. If you had said, you know, if you could have any one thing happen this week, you said the firing of Jim McElwain or this, I would have said, you know, McElwain's probably going to get fired anyway. I'll take this. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, this is new and unexpected. Florida hiring a Nick Saban disciple who can't get anything out of the offense and leaves in just sort of sheepish, stupid fashion. Yeah, that's not new. Seen this movie. This one, the sequel was somehow worse.
I have seen that movie before, and who knows? We could see it again.
Fantastic. Yeah, great job, Georgia. Just You know, I have come to terms with it by telling myself that you don't want a small forest fire. You know, small forest fires are bad because they can spread and they don't really do anything for them. You want a big forest fire. You want one that just like cleans everything out, so that's how you get growth. That's how you get rebirth and newness. And you know what, Georgia? You just unloaded all the flamethrowers on Florida, and I appreciate that because it's cleansing. You cleansed us in the fire.
You want a controlled fire.
Yeah.
You want to clear out all that brush so it doesn't spark up during dry season. And goddamn, if there was one thing Georgia did in Florida, it was control.
And if there's one thing Florida's offense was, it was a dry season. A real dry season.
Been dry for a while.
All right, we're running
Though 268 straight games of trickling.
That's right. We're running 38 tumbleweed Z break.
This streak is a lot like the world's oldest tree when they show the world's oldest tree. Like, here's the world's oldest tree still kicking after 2,800 years. And
what does it do? It persists.
It looks like a piece of driftwood. Doesn't even put out leaves anymore. They're like, it's technically alive.
750-year-old turtle just sunning itself.
Kill me.
It's eating a piece of lettuce for like 8,000 days straight. Look at it go. That's the Florida offense. And that, by the way, you know, if you watch the game, it's amazing how little Georgia had to try. All Georgia had to do was fill out the forms, man. That's all they did. Like, oh, look, we made a tackle on your terrible play. Oh, look, we blocked. Everyone blocked correctly.
Yeah, this is a little legalistic, but have you two ever seen a trial where one side is representing themselves? That's what this game was. Georgia, you hired an attorney. You hired a good attorney, did his homework, did discovery, got all his motion papers in order. Florida, you decided to represent yourself pro se. And Georgia wisely said, you know what? I'm going to let Florida speak. I'm going to let Florida speak for as long as they want. Say whatever they want to the judge. Say whatever they want to the jury. Not going to object. Not going to try to slow them down or stop them. I'm just going to let them be as Florida as they fucking can be.
Yeah, and that if you look at the box score, this reflects this. Florida's got more first downs. They had the ball more. They just did more stuff, which is the saddest thing of all. There was so much effort in all directions, and none of it mattered.
Florida's calling their Pataguana as a witness? Sure, put him on the stand. Absolutely. His name's Lenny? I love it. Swear him in.
Georgia in the huddle every snap, just like, click, ask Corso. Sure, fine. Give me the play. Okay, run it. It worked. Okay, great. Give me another one. That's fine, too. Sure.
Yeah. No, they were just clicking, like, choose type of play, right? And most of the time it was run.
Run.
Because, remember, if you're Milton Berle and you need to win a bar bet, you only pull out enough to win. And that's exactly what Georgia did. They passed seven times. Seven times. I mentioned that at the top, whatever. I'd like to repeat it here. When the other team only throws seven times, you're on some extremely humiliating shit for the other team.
It's also, they only threw seven times, and Florida threw 25. So you would think just the way numbers work, you'd be like, Florida had to finish with more passing yards, right? No. No, Georgia finished with almost 40 more passing yards, throwing the ball seven times, than Florida did throwing it 20-fucking-5.
You know, when a team from Georgia plays Florida and just doesn't pass, bad things.
You could also, this is that game plan, I would just write these words across it for Georgia, which is, or for Florida, which is, for sale, baby shoes never worn.
QB for sale QB shoes never worn.
QB shoes never worn. It's the saddest story, and it only took so many words to tell the story. Yeah, it's bad, but you know, I enjoy that it's decisive. I do. Because one, the reason we lost this game just got fired. That happened.
Yes and no, Doug Nussmeier is still running the offense, so
Oh, we do get to watch that, which what a joy that'll be, because you get to hear, you know, national commentators and analysts openly make fun of what's happening on the field. Like basic things. yeah, that's a joy. But he won't be running the offense forever. More importantly, he won't be recruiting, which is another thing. I enjoy that there was so little faith in what was happening there that the minute that milk turned, right, the minute that anything happened to indicate that it was going bad, as if this were a zombie movie where somebody just spiked a little fever, right? Like, were you bitten? No. Did you just sneeze? No, man. Staff. That's what Florida was waiting for. And if you don't believe that, I don't know, go back and look at the statement that the university put out, sort of hanging the coach out to dry when he said they were death threats but didn't elaborate on them. And the university was like, oh yeah, he didn't give us any further information on those. So
we're going to fire him in a few days. We're going to try and save about $9 million first. If we can. And we did, by the way. Cut about $9 million off that buyout.
And it's even better because his agent, Jimmy Sexton, is also the agent of at least one coach that Florida is probably interested in talking to. So he was like, yeah, seems fair. Seems good. All right. We done here?
So
have you ever seen that before?
What, a coach taking less of a buyout? Or?
No, a coach's agent putting himself in a position where one might reasonably infer that he was saving the university money on one deal so that he could make another.
I mean,
now I'm not saying that's what he was doing.
Right.
I'm just saying one could infer that.
I mean, I think he probably looks at it this way. Jim McElwain's going to get another job. Jimmy Sexton's going to get his percentage. Like, who it comes from is sort of irrelevant. The more chaos you can cause, the more of your clients you can cause to get raises from their current schools or go somewhere else and make more money. It's all good. So you just need to, like, why you don't want to gum up the chaos, the coaching carousel. You need that sucker to spin and spin fast, because it spits money when it does, and you get a percentage of that money. So just, you know, if this is the cost of greasing this unsafe carnival ride, buddy, let's slap some Crisco on these ball bearings and go.
That's spoken like a true Florida man.
Thanks. I'm pretty dead inside.
Now, since we talked about Florida for, as dictated by the listeners, for 70 minutes last night.
Yeah.
We can probably jump off and discuss some Penn State, Ohio State, which I'll think.
Yeah, I think I'm much more comfortable.
That'd be a nice refreshing change of pace.
I'm much more comfortable living there.
But so many points, first of all.
Yeah, look at
39
them all.
On one side, 38 on another. Didn't even know that was legal.
This was a game where you had Ohio State, as Bill wrote, spotted Penn State 14 points. Kicked to Saquon and then did a bad job on kick coverage. Well, that's 7 right there. Gave up an early fumble. Well, that's another 14. And despite that and a whole bunch of other weird stuff, pulled off a comeback. And if you look at the yards per play, dominated Penn State all game long other than the big weird plays. This is one of the most impressive performances by any team this year, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And put all game long, despite that, despite spotting up 14 points, putting Penn State in bad positions on both sides of the ball. I mean, Saquon Barkley wasn't that effective, you know, aside from the runs that he was going to get, right? Like, they handed him the kickoff return, right? But other than that, it's not a whole lot there in terms of consistent production. They pretty much turned him into a random occurrence, right? And they did that with their defensive line. You know, I don't think Penn State's offensive line probably got enough scrutiny prior to this game. One reason is that they weren't playing Ohio State the rest of the season. Because especially
they had only played Akron 7 times.
Yeah, just 7 Akrons in a row. And when you play Ohio State, what you're facing on the D-line, it's a little bit different.
It's also good because we're slowly learning that every big Ohio State game has to have, like, certain elements. And it's really just a matter of who fate has assigned those elements will go to. Questionable call. Yeah, you had at least one of those with a touchdown in the end zone that was called an interception taken away by Ohio State that upon review was turned into a touchdown. Yeah, had that. Fluky special teams block. Yeah, went the other way this time. With a 35-20 lead with about 12 minutes left to play, Penn State punted from the Ohio State 43. You're thinking, okay, they're just going to drop it in there. Ohio State's going to have a long field. Nope. Blocked, and Ohio State started with the ball at the Penn State 41, scored two plays later to make this a one-score game. It's just these are the things you have to have. And then you also have to have one quarterback completely melting down. Sometimes it's JT Barrett. Sometimes he's the one who just can't complete a pass to save his life when it matters. It turns out it was Trace McSorley in this one. That last possession that Penn State had, when they got the ball after a kind of a shitty squib kick, started at the 41, down one with a minute 48 to play, and I believe all three timeouts, and this is what they did. Incomplete pass to Saquon Barkley, sacked for a loss of 5 yards, incomplete pass to Mike Gesicki, incomplete pass to Juwan Johnson. They didn't gain a yard in this final drive for them, which was just God.
No, I mean, Ryan, you mean you say a yard, that means they gained multiple yards, right? Like more than one?
A negative five is a multiple, yes.
Ah, okay.
So you can do that multiplication.
Also, in this Ohio State big game template, you need people bitching about a specific running back not getting enough carries, mm-hmm. which for the first half, it was J.K. Dobbins for Ohio State. Their running backs, Ohio State backs finished up with 20 carries to J.T. Barrett's 17 carries to 39 throws, which that's not all that out of whack in a shootout. And by the end, it was, you know, Saquon only touched it so many times and not much toward the end. And like, you know, when you really look at it, he was averaging 2.1. And Ohio State's defensive line looked like a fucking pack of hounds. So that's pretty understandable as well. But it's just something you have to gripe about. You have to look at, like, the pitch counts, like your baseball fans
sure.
or something, and,
sure, sure,
and
sure.
act like, you know, like, this guy needs to be shooting more threes.
Yeah, that's a baseball term.
The thing that both Notre Dame and Ohio State have in common, if you just watch them, is the ability.
So many people just bristled just at the mm-hmm. idea that you're bringing mm-hmm. this up. But okay,
no, go ahead. No. I'm going to do this. All okay. right. Is that they have the ability to just slowly turn the screws, right, and just put pressure. They put pressure at so many points, right, defensively, offensively, maybe not so much on special teams, but so much pressure at every single point on the field. Like if you watch Penn State. I mean, they unraveled in really simple ways, right? Like really simple sort of coverage rules and stuff because they just, if it wasn't the run, it was the pass. And if it wasn't the pass, well, it was probably still the pass because JT Barrett didn't miss a pass in the fourth quarter and threw for 188 yards and three TDs in a quarter against Penn State, a team that didn't have an L coming in. It's unreal what happens if you're a team that can consistently do that, even at a low level, because by the time the fourth quarter rolls around, there's just parts all over the road, right? The machine is coming apart from what the other team has done to you. It's so cool to watch. It really is, like when it's working well, which is one of the reasons, by the way, like if Ohio State wants to go as far as they want this year, it's fine with me. I really, because they're a joy to watch right now.
Per internet troll regulations, we are also supposed to mention that the other thing Ohio State and Notre Dame have in common is that they could not get into Michigan. We can continue.
Thank you. I mean, I do have a Michigan tattoo, so I'm contractually obligated.
You are soul bound, which is uncomfortable for you, but here we are.
Oh, you want to talk about discomfort? Oh, the segue. Discomfort is giving up a loss to Houston and doing it like this, okay? Because USF was undefeated. And USF's no longer undefeated. And they lost to Houston. Houston, a team that was under their own kind of pressure, i.e. Major Applewhite in his first year, wasn't going exactly as planned. This changed things. And do you know how it changed? They gave up a long fourth down on the final drive.
Well, by long, you mean 9, maybe 14, 15 yards, right?
Oh, no, you can just take that little mountain climber from The Price is Right. Keep him going. I believe it was, I think it was a 4th and 20.
4th and 24, if I recall. 4th and 24? Yeah, I'll pull it up here.
Heaven forbid. 4th and 20 is excusable. 4th and 24. Oh.
4th and 24, they completed a 30-yard pass. Yeah. And if you go back and dig this play up, it wasn't like, oh, somebody got lost in coverage or, Derek King scrambled around and somebody just got loose. No, it was just thrown into a sea of South Florida defenders and none of them made the play.
They actually, he threw it into the lunchroom. That's what it looked like, right? Like, pizza day!
Food fight!
Mom says I can't have lactose.
Yeah, and brought it down, and then, as if that weren't bad enough, 20-yard scramble by the quarterback for a TD. Walks in just scot-free. Horrible. It was like I didn't see it happen live. I had to watch it a couple of minutes later, and it was worse than I imagined. So that's how USF manages to become a one-loss team and hands UCF the keys for that outside New Year's bid for the team. For the team that we put in for diversity's sake, right? Like, oh, let's just get an American. Let's get some charming team in there. And then that team inevitably just blows up whoever they face.
Yeah, it's the Burger King. Hey, we need a wheelchair kid for this Burger King Kids Club. We did enough, right? We're sensitive now. Good job, us.
I think USF, the UCF USF is like the vegan option.
Yeah. It's the vegan option, and the vegan option is just going to roll in with a warhammer and absolutely blindside somebody, right?
Yeah, like, this is just rice with tomatoes on it. Yep, sure is.
Sure is. It's the best thing on the menu.
But what really stings about this is, if you're South Florida, this was a beatable Houston team. This was a team that, you know, had lost to other bad teams, played inconsistently all year long. You had them on the ropes, you know. You should have won this game. It's a lot easier if you're, say, I don't know, TCU, and you look and you're like, listen, we lost to the Giant Killers. All Iowa State does in 2017 is take scalps. That's just what they do. Well, you can't be mad at that.
No, like Iowa State, by the way, like once everyone loses to Iowa State, they become the biggest fans of Iowa State, right? Like, because that loss has to mean something, right? The baffling thing about Iowa State is, when did Iowa State figure out that they were good at football? At what point in the schedule?
After the Texas game, when their then starting quarterback was no longer on the team.
Correct. They lose their starting quarterback, which sparks a 4-game win streak against Oklahoma, including Oklahoma and TCU, both undefeated. Before that, this all makes sense. Before that, they lose to Iowa 44-41 in OT. This is all I'm saying. Even though every game Iowa's played this year equals 17-7, save for the Iowa State game, the fundament of any quality team and their schedule will rest on Iowa, right? Because the contagion moves like this. What is Ohio State's only loss?
Oklahoma.
Correct. What's Oklahoma's only loss?
Iowa State.
Correct. And Iowa State's biggest loss would be?
Texas, I guess. That's the one that was not close.
No, they care about, right?
Oh, well, yeah, that's El Asico, which was a great game this year. And again, we're wrong about everything.
Correct. So any arguments involving those teams? And now TCU, since they caught one, right?
Who's Ohio State travel to play next? Everything hinges on Iowa.
The circle is complete. This is also a good place for us to do our first charity ad read. I'm going to let Jason take it away from here.
So this one comes from Kevin, and these were sent to us a couple months ago as part of our disaster relief charity drive. So this one is going to sound a little bit outdated on the surface. Kevin says, please try to sell people on Texas after we lose to Iowa State. Good luck. As we now know, Texas went to Iowa State and won by 10 points. At the time, That was sort of mocked as like, oh, Texas finally got back on track by beating Iowa State. You know, Texas finally won in Ames. But looking back, that was a really good win for Texas. And it goes even deeper than that. If you look at 2016, you had the win over Notre Dame, number 10 Notre Dame, but Notre Dame went 4-8, so we're not counting that. This is a bigger win than Notre Dame last year. You beat a nothing special, really. You beat a 7-6 Baylor, but this is going to be a better win than that. 2015, you closed that by beating a 10-3 Baylor, but that was a team without a quarterback. Literally did not have a quarterback on the field that day. So we're not going to count that. This is a better win than that. You have to go all the way back to a game that was literally more than 2 years ago from today when Texas knocked off Oklahoma. Texas beating Iowa State in 2017 was Texas's biggest win in years. So I think you're feeling pretty good about Texas Iowa State game right now.
I mean, it's keeping Iowa State out of the playoff conversation right now. And you think, oh, you're an idiot and you're making shit up. No, I'm very serious.
No, we're not making that mad. Like, it's the fascinating thing after this week are the number of teams that you can discuss who at least merit theoretical playoff conversation, right? For instance, I don't know. They're lurking. Memphis? I mean, I'm talking at the very furthest.
Okay, they're like that you went way over there to start.
So that's
I'm at the edge of the yard.
Okay.
That's like Bama loses to Charleston Southern or whatever and then wins the SEC.
Yeah.
Like something that weird, like way out there. But closer in, like if you look at teams that you go, man, you know, if not for a few bounces of the ball or a score here or there, right? We're pretty close to, I mean, we're reasonably close, one game difference from Virginia Tech, right? And Virginia Tech, like, still theoretically an interesting team.
Still in it. You beat Miami, you're, you know, all you got at that point, just went out and beat Clemson.
Yeah, the only team that you've lost to, right? Just rectify what done gone wrong for you, right? If not for, you know, getting beat in pretty bad this weekend. I'm not even going to make the case for NC State. They got hammered.
Yeah, it's not happening. Also, you have to remember who their other losses to. It's a good South Carolina team, but not a good enough to be, yeah, that can be one of your two losses and you're getting it. Which is fine. It's still going to be a fine year for NC State. We're all very proud of you and we love you very much. Really what this is setting up for, though, in 2 weeks, Iowa State plays Oklahoma State. As of now, you can't tell me with a definitely straight face that they won't go on the road and beat West Virginia. So we could be looking at like a top 10 Iowa State team playing Oklahoma State. And if Oklahoma State wins that game, how fucked is it that like they will be the ones who can say like, well, yeah, look at this quality win. Look at this shine I got on me right here. Taking down Iowa State when nobody else could. And I don't know, you're probably thinking like, well, yeah, Iowa State, they're not going to beat West Virginia. West Virginia's in a very, you know, the holidays are coming. Will Greer is feeling very giving these days. And against that defense, they will happily accept any and all charity that you throw. But
buddy, that's the Riot Bowl.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you throw out all the statistics. You throw out all the Will Greer 300-yard games when it comes to the Riot Bowl. That's for the gas can of destiny, or whatever it is that Smoking Musket and Wide Right Natty Light call it.
What is it? I haven't paid close attention, but there's some story that Iowa State fans like ate a Taco Bell out of all its food after this TCU win.
Yeah, they went so hard they crashed. They emptied out the Taco Bell in Ames.
Like pillaging vandals.
Say a prayer for the facilities management personnel in Ames today, because man, they got some work. If you clean out a Taco Bell, they got some work ahead of them. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Ames is famous for its clean water. That might not be true today.
not today.
You know, if you're cleaning out an entire Taco Bell, yeah, you might want to just wait a minute on the water table. Issue a boil advisory.
I'm telling you, the anuses of Ames are boiling today.
The other game this week. Just kind of baffling to me when you look at it. And we're going to mention it. In fact, I want you to just admire our restraint in waiting some 30 plus minutes into the podcast to mention this. But it says something about how dismal Florida State season has been thus far. That we waited this long.
Yeah. I mean, we joke, not jokingly. We said that there was a good chance Boston College was going to win this game. I was a little skeptical. I am, again, very stupid. I don't think anybody here was like, oh yeah, it's going to be a 32-point victory.
Well, we knew Boston College would score about 35 points.
Sure, but Florida State has fallen to such obscene levels of offensive ineptitude at this point that it's just – it's actually hard to watch. And this is somebody who, you know, thought he would be perfectly happy with a terrible Florida State team. It's making me uncomfortable at this point. It's making – it's sort of like, okay, sir, can you just – we just need you to leave. Sir, you're making a scene. Can you just go home? It'd make everybody a lot happier, sir. It's not great.
No, it's very bad. And a lot of things happen. I think that there's a lot of, like, our own bud Elliot is fond of enumerating all the ways in which Florida State is dysfunctional right now. But it's very hard to look at that first game versus Alabama and not just see that as, you know, when you're about to get sick, right? And you do something stupid like, I don't know, stay up way too late. Or you're like, oh no, you know, I'm feeling a little run down, but you know, I think it's a good day to do heavy squats and sprints. Yeah, it's a great idea. And then I'll go drinking. And you wake up the next day and you have the plague. And you were probably already getting sick, but there's one little thing that sort of kicks you over the edge. Playing Bama is that inadvisable night out drinking prior to feeling sort of run down. Because that's what really sort of, I think, kicked the barn down for him.
I mean, Tennessee has this famous streak earlier in the year where they went, was it a month plus, where they didn't score a touchdown? And they went even longer without scoring an offensive touchdown. They have 19 trips to the end zone in 8 games. How many do you think Florida State has in 7? It's 12. It's 12.
Ooh, I was going to go 14.
It's 12. The only team that has fewer touchdowns, offensive, defensive, special teams, whatever, is Kent State, which has 8. UTEP has more touchdowns. Georgia Southern has more touchdowns. Illinois has, like, that's, oof. For a team that has not had, even in down years, you know, relatively down years, they've never had this much trouble just scoring. It's amazingly inept right now.
Yeah, you know they're gonna beat Florida by 20, right?
Yeah, and you know what? It'll probably be 21-2. That sounds right. And it'll be 7 Florida State field goals.
Points are points right now, man. I'm not even like this is when you about mid seasons when you get disgusted with lack of production and you go, it's another field goal. Time November ends, you get around to rivalry season, you're like, woohoo! Put 12 on him! Let's do it!
Run it up! We want 10!
Let's get 18! Come on, let's get 18!
Listen.
We just went in and dropped 9 at Doak Campbell Stadium.
Listen, it worked for Stanford, alright? They didn't have a lot of points, but they got the ones they needed to.
They went and dropped 15 on them.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. That's a right. That's ranked Stanford. Ugh, rankings are the worst.
That's very silly.
This is what I do think we should allow. We should like the problem with the top 25 is that you have to fill out the whole thing, and I do think we should allow whether it's the playoff committee or the AP or the coaches. I think we should allow them to just stop when you want. If you're like I ranked 16 teams and everybody else is trash, I think you should be allowed to do that. I think the top 25 should have 25 as a maximum. But if you're like, yeah, I'm only ranking 9 teams. Everybody else is kind of trashy. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
No, yeah. That's why don't you, you know, I always think that you should also do like, you should also do winners of the quarter. You do that in business, right?
Sure.
Like, hey, you know.
Employee of the month.
Sure, employee of the month, right? Like Khalil Tate, for instance, it's going to be very hard for him, I think, to win the Heisman, because I just don't think Heisman voters are very imaginative as a whole. They have an accepted understanding of what constitutes a Heisman winner, and I don't think somebody who starts in October is necessarily that person. Now, I could be wrong. However, that's the employee of the month right there. It's Khalil Tate. You can give him the employee of the month. You know, team of the month, right? You want to be like, oh, let's shout out the Tucson office. The Tucson office, sales are through the roof, right? They're just selling big numbers. No, now, small numbers, right? Now, because the most baffling number that you'll get out of the weekend is any stat that you read from the Washington State-Arizona game. I'm not just talking about Arizona stats, although they're weird, okay? Now, mind you, I'm going to give you the score and just fool this for you. I watched the whole thing, so I'm going to spoil it for you, okay? This is why math and football aren't always friends. Final score, 58, Arizona, 37, Washington State. Obviously a convincing blowout where Arizona must have had constant production on offense and held Washington State to just a minimum of what they're capable of offensively. Washington State had more yards, like way more yards. They had 646 yards to 585. First downs. This one broke my brain. Like, I had a very, very small stroke. Another one. Looking at the stat. Because Arizona had 585 yards of offense, 58 points, and they did this on 13 first downs.
What? No, that doesn't. Nah, no, not right.
Every time you look up during an Arizona game since Khalil Tate took over, it's like, yeah, there he goes. Yep, there he goes, 76 yards. And it's not like he does it every play. You only see it 3 or 4 times a week, which that's a fucking lot, you know. But, like, Arizona only needs 3 or 4 plays a week.
What if this whole Arizona season was, in fact, a misguided, poorly communicated Heisman campaign? Be like, well, we'd like to show you, you know, here, it's the Pepsi challenge. Here's Arizona without Khalil Tate, and here it is with him. And now clearly you understand why you have to give the Heisman. Spencer, this is also a good place for you to do your assigned read for the week.
Oh, the assigned reading, because I will actually do the homework for once. My assigned reading is going to come from, let's see, reader Sean. We were just talking about the Pac-12. From Sean, he says, college football on the West Coast is superior because we have dim sum as a game day brunch option. And watching Butch Jones lose a very winnable game in hilarious fashion while eating dumplings is just better. I will take your word for it. I enjoy watching that happen anyway with dim sum, even with the chicken feet that are really just kind of, you know, bones surrounded by this kind of gelatinous goo. I'd have to agree. Dim sum could only enhance the experience of watching Butch Jones systematically lose a game. Pac-12 football, it means the right amount because we have more in our lives. It's not the tidiest tagline for a conference. I'll give you that. But there's a nugget of economical truth in there that I respect. Pac-12 football, it just means the right amount.
It just means a little. Just means a dash.
Just means enough, man. I got enough beauty in my life. Get to look out beautiful, like, western ranges and the ocean and, you know, have things like nice weather and a lack of humidity. Yeah.
I will say a bunch of bones surrounded by gelatinous material is what we should start calling the Arkansas Ole Miss game. That feels about right.
100%. Like, I don't, by the way, like, another bizarre thing about Pac-12 football is, if you haven't been out there, Pac-12 After Dark is really only after dark for you. Right? Like, it ends after dark, but you still actually have a reasonable evening. We did point this out in, I believe, our warm-up. I think it's worth repeating that Pac-12, in order to increase visibility, you want to put those big games on early. You want to make sure that they're front and center, right? For instance, unexpected though it may be, the battle for the Pac-12 South is likely to come down to Arizona-USC, correct?
Yes.
They play in L.A. this coming Saturday. Ryan Nanny, what time do they kick off? Eastern time.
10:45.
Not even 10:30. They pushed it back 15.
So you can't have it in the middle slot, because then it's going up against Bedlam. And you I mean, if you put it at night, it'd be up against LSU Bama. Although, then you can market it as like, hey, y'all want to see some points? You enjoying that 13-2 game? Because we just put up that many in the last 2 minutes.
It's not great. I'm going to do the last read, and hopefully it will serve as a little bit of inspiration for us all going forward. This one comes from... This is from Reese. Thank you to Reese Hale. He would like to point out that Texas lost to Kansas, and people don't forget. That's true. Texas sure as shit did lose to Kansas last year. That was, I want to say it was around this time, roughly. It was near the end of the season, but not quite at the end of the season. It was November 19th. It was their penultimate game. The game where they just needed that one win would have been bowl eligible. And I say this because this is the time, you know, we as college football fans and as media members, we refuse to just accept that we know nothing, that the best way to approach this sport is that we don't know anything. We're the same people. I am the same person who said, even though Iowa State beat Oklahoma, well, they can't do it against TCU. So we're all looking at and saying, okay, well, Penn State lost to Ohio State. Their resume is not that good outside of the conference, and they didn't draw anybody. You know, they didn't get the sort of signature win that they needed within the conference to be in the playoff. They're out. They're done. You know, we're all looking and we're sort of saying this is how it's going to line up. Man, there's so much dumb shit left to happen. There's so much dumb shit left to happen. We just saw number two and number four lose, and we're still like, yeah, well, this is all right. Well. This, yeah, the plane is on fire, but I know how the plane works, so it's probably fine. No, man, the fire is somehow going to turn into ice. The ice is somehow going to turn into an ice dragon. And the ice dragon, yeah, he's stealing all the oxygen masks. That's how this plane works. It doesn't make sense, and you don't have to understand it, and it's better if you don't.
By the way, I have one more stat that I did not get to unload about that Arizona game. Mm-hmm. It'll make you ill. First of all, Arizona only ran 51 plays. Only 51. On just 7 of those plays, 7 out of 51, all right, they got 60% of their yardage.
Sure. Uh-huh. This all, yep, it all makes sense.
So 13% of their plays. seven plays accounted for 60%. Rich Rod running that trickle down. Offense. There's big plays, and the production will just spread down from those.
We should also briefly mention, yeah, Louisville lost to Wake. Louisville has beaten, let's see, 2 ACC opponents at this point, UNC and Florida State. Two teams that are more similar than they are different at this juncture. Gave up
not in the good way.
Not in the good way. Gave up 42 points to the Claw Fence, gave up 461 yards passing. John Wolford threw 5 touchdowns and averaged almost 14 yards a passing attempt. I mean, can we even call what Louisville has a defense anymore? Is this the other misguided Heisman campaign where Louisville decided, well, you know, we think Lamar's really got to put up some standout numbers to impress the voters this year. So if the defense just gets off the field reliably by giving up touchdowns, that just gives him more snaps. This is good for him, right?
We got to get Lamar back out there.
Lamar back out there. Send 8 guys out and tell them all to rush the quarterback. Let's see what happens.
I mean, there's kind of some fucked up logic to it. Like, he's your best player by a mile. He's the only thing good about your team. Why wouldn't you want him on the field?
Yeah.
Doesn't that increase your chances to win to get Lamar out there?
You could.
It's a very Mike D'Antoni approach. Like, fuck defense. Just go. Just keep shooting. Shoot, 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 shoot.
If you really want to cinch that Heisman, man, Joel Lanning's doing it. Why don't we put Lamar Jackson at free safety? Just do that for November. If you really want to make everybody mad as fire over this, right? Like,
why is he handling kickoffs? I don't know. They're just trying to get him more time, more air time. That's the only thing they can do at this point. He's not great at it. Yeah, but it's still fun. It's still fun to watch.
A couple of other baffling notes. Remember Virginia? 5-0 Virginia?
Oh, no.
You know what they didn't do?
It's because we said nice things.
Because we said nice things about them, right? Because they lost 31-14 to Pitt, which is respectable because Pitt is America's most influential team year in and year out. So who better to course correct Virginia in their moment of hubris than a dominant Pitt squad? And additionally,
Virginia may have blown its best chance of they got Georgia Tech, Louisville, Miami, Virginia Tech left. That said, if Virginia gets bowl eligible by scoring 48 points on Louisville, yeah, that's going to be funny as shit. Funny as shit.
I will roll. Additionally, I'd like to mention a couple of things that happened this week. Same thing happened to a lot of different coaches. People who were on the verge of being fired, and last week were like, man, they really righted the ship. Guess who jumped back in the dumpster? A couple people. Like, firmly in the dumpster. And guess who jumped out of that dumpster to make room for him? Well, first of all, Brett Bielema. Brett Bielema just hopped out of that at the end of
October. Perpetually jumping in and out.
He's getting conditioning in.
That's like box, he's doing box jumps.
Listen, hogs root, all right? Hogs root wherever they can find a win. I don't care how deep I gotta dig. I don't care what it smells like. I think the trash pit in Star Wars is the best part. I don't know why they left.
There's still some good meat on that bone.
Just doing some dumpster jumps. Classic Arkansas workout. Yeah, they beat Ole Miss by a point. And you know what? That's not a great outcome for anybody because 1 point went over Ole Miss. It's not going to buy you much. But you know what it does buy you? Keeps you from losing to Ole Miss.
It's also a lot more impressive when you realize they were down 31-7 at one point in the first half. Ole Miss, this was a hell of an Auburn impression to go up 24 fucking points and then score two field goals the rest of the game and let this Arkansas team crawl back and beat you. It was especially good because Arkansas won this game on a 34-yard field goal. Ole Miss had all three timeouts left at that point, and they froze them three times in a row. And every time Connor Limpert went ahead and kicked the ball, even though the time had been blown. And he made all three of the frozen kick misses. So you're like, well, maybe? And he said, fuck you. And he nailed that fucking game winner. It was amazing. It was really amazing. And this game makes no sense. It should be banned in several states. And probably is.
So you got Bert dumpster jumping out of the dumpster, or at least showing signs of getting out of the trash this week by taking Arkansas to a mighty 3-5 and thus beginning the holy month of November, since October didn't go quite so well for him.
Why doesn't he just get Arkansas to schedule like 7 games in November and only 1 in October?
Yeah, just pull off some 1898 Sewanee shit, whatever it is, whichever team it was.
Let's play 2!
I like the idea of Burt's just straddling the edge of the dumpster. Which way am I leaning? Can you tell? You probably can't. Better not fire me. I might fall out the dumpster.
Still costs like the GDP of a small country to decide which side of the dumpster he's going to be on, right? Like, this cash is heavy. Who knows what side it's going to fall on? Another person jumping back into that dumpster. Oh, man. Mississippi State just helping Kevin Sumlin back into it. Just here. Hold it open for you. You step in there. Isn't it warm? Isn't it cozy? Just climb back in there. Texas A&M got hammered. Like, just absolutely battered. Like, every time I looked up, I kept flipping over to this, and every time I looked up, it was Nick Fitzgerald splitting safeties. It's not good. It's not good when Nick Fitzgerald is splitting safeties on your defense. They lost 35-14. He's back. He's back in the tank. That'll be fun. And you know what, though? The dumpster, it's looking pretty nice. It's all polished up. It's been swept.
Oh, there's money in the dumpster for sure.
Oh, yeah, because Butch Jones, he's done what he can to add the little homie touches, because he just lives there.
I appreciate that Tennessee refuses to close the lid, though. They're like, ugh, it's so much work. Can somebody else do it? Please?
The Tennessee's being, like, real college students about it, you know? Like, Tennessee's like, Yeah, I could clean up.
No, actually,
under the toilet, but I'll just wait till I drop something else down there and then get them both.
This all makes sense because, you know, one of the famous features of the UT Knoxville campus is the body farm. And if you mm-hmm. don't know, it's a place where it's a controlled field, basically, where they bury human bodies or parts of human bodies in different conditions so they can sort of say, like, okay, this is what an arm looks like if it's buried in mostly limestone-rich soil or something. This is what it looks like after 3 months, 3 years, whatever. And all the football program is doing is contributing to that effort because they're like, all right, let's see what happens to this dead coaching career after a certain – okay, this is what it looks like after a Kentucky loss. Cool. Let's find out what it looks like after it loses by 30 points to Missouri. Let's see what happens after it misses bowl eligibility by losing to Vanderbilt at the end of the year. This is good. This is all, like, very good shit here. This is super helpful.
Also, one more coach who managed to, you know, join the crowd in our capacious dumpster of potentially, you know, fired coaches. Arizona State. Todd Graham, riding high. Great defense. Just flex it. Just a complete remake of everything that Arizona State was. And it was throwback Saturday against USC because they went back to looking like they usually look. 48-17. Had no ability whatsoever to stop anything USC was trying to do. Gave up 600 yards, 29 first downs. Had worst out of all, but a really familiar one to Arizona State fans. You know how you've been holding off rushing attacks? Just, you know, oh, man. Tackling so well. Well, you know, that's everyone's inconsistent. You got back to what works, allowing 341 yards rushing.
Every member of Washington, every opponent on Washington's schedule is really engaged in this impressive concerted effort to make Washington's resume as trash as it possibly could be. Even when you get down to teams like Fresno State. Fresno State was, you know, having a good little turn to the season. Had lost to Alabama and Washington both on the road, but had otherwise looked like pretty impressive, and they went out and lost to, you know, a two-win UNLV team. Oregon State, no, couldn't possibly get that win. Cal loses. Rutgers continues to be Rutgers. And the loss, Arizona State, which you thought, okay, well, maybe that's going to be one of those where you can look it back at the end of the season and say, yeah, well, that was the start of it. They beat Utah. No, just get hammered. It is the most poorly kept conspiracy possible at this point, that everybody who was assigned to play Washington this year just decided, all right, we're gonna make it all look like ass by the end. The best win you're gonna have is over Montana. Enjoy it.
I was just gonna say FCS Montana, they're down to 5-3. A competitive 5-3, but however much you know, you can't say like, "Oh, we beat the FCS national champs" or anything like that.
I respect it. It's like the retro tank, right?
Hey, here's a really fun fact, though. Washington and Alabama might share the same best win because they both beat Fresno State.